Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Moving the needle, helping pet owners through vaccine hesitancy. We know we certainly have that struggle every now and then. And joining us is Dr. Natalie Marks. And we want to thank our friends at Boehringer Ingelheim for sponsoring this great conversation. How are you, Dr. Marks?
I'm doing well, Dr. Christman. How are you?
Well, good. Thank you. I'm excited to learn more from you because this is a topic that we tend to be chatting a lot more about lately, but just fine. So I'm really excited to dive in and get to know a little bit more about some of the vaccine hesitancy that we see with our clients. A little bit of information about our wonderful colleague and friend, Dr. Natalie Marks. She has been a veterinarian at Blum Animal Hospital since 2006 and co-owned it until 2018. Before 2006, Dr. Marks worked at Allatoona Animal Hospital just north of Atlanta. She has multiple media experiences, as many of you probably know, and as well as a speaker all around the world. And upon her return to Chicago, Dr. Marks became very active in the Chicago Veterinary Medical Association, serving on the executive board. She's also a past board member of the Illinois State Veterinary Medical Association and an active volunteer for AVMA and American Animal Hospital Association. She continues volunteering to elevate feline medicine with the Feline Veterinary Medical Association, and she's received many prestigious awards throughout her career. She was honored with the Dr. Irwin Small First Decade Award, which is presented to a veterinarian who has made significant contributions to organized veterinary medicine during her first decade of practice. She was awarded many other wonderful things. You've seen her on TV, at podcasts such as this, and she's worked with us here at DVM 360, and she's also the CEO of Vane, the Veterinary Angel Network, and throughout her career, she also sits on several early stage company advisory boards. And most recently, Dr. Marks became the Chief Veterinary Officer at OpenVet, a free novel clinical intelligence platform for all species, providing evidence-based medicine to empower veterinarians to practice at their highest level. So she was kind enough to squeeze some time out of her busy day to chat with us about this great conversation here. So, okay. I want to unpack this, Dr. Marks, because this is, I was just talking to a colleague about this over the weekend about vaccinations. And what do you think, from your perspective, are the most common reasons pet owners feel hesitant about vaccinating their pets? And what differences do you see in concerns between cat and dog owners, if there are any?
Yeah, I think it's a universal emotion that drives all of this. And it's not that our pet parents are extremely anti-vaccine thinking, it's usually the underpinning for a lot of the hesitation that people have about anything that's new or even somewhat familiar, and it's fear, right? And fear drives hesitancy across the world, no matter what we're talking about. We know, just like both of us being pet parents as well, we know that we're always a bit afraid of doing something that could harm our family member, right? Our furry family member. And that fear could come from something that's pretty, you know, closely associated, like a prior perceived reaction. It could be misinformation that they've gotten online. It could be the confusion of why a vaccine is absolutely needed, or even a sense that, you know, my pet's lifestyle doesn't match what you're describing as a risk in the exam room. So some of that vaccine hesitancy, though, also can come from a lack of clarity in how we as a profession really explain what risk is. Because sometimes I think it becomes very commonplace because we've been doing this for a long time and it's a mainstay, right, of our day, that we sometimes can say something as, we'll just say, as direct as your dog needs this vaccine. But with so many new pet parents and so many pet parents now getting information in lots of different places outside of a veterinarian, we don't always explain what the disease is or the likelihood of having an exposure to a disease, the severity of what infection with that disease could look like, the safety profile of that vaccine, or even why we're recommending this vaccine specific to that patient. So not just because that patient is a dog or a cat. And I do think there are some differences between dog and cat owners. So a lot of our dog pet parents will ask, you know, I don't want to have this many vaccines at once. They often will question, as many of you are probably nodding, around leptospirosis, lifestyle risk. What do I need to do boarding or daycare for my dog? Or why my small indoor dog, and I'll put that in quotes, needs certain protection. Whereas cat parents or cat caregivers often tend to focus on, my cat is indoors. Why do they truly need vaccines? The stress of coming to the veterinary practice, injection site reactions, in some cases, even going as far as bringing up feline injection site sarcoma risk. So for cats, there's a lot more nuance around that indoor only kind of perception, the risk of feline leukemia or rabies, and even what vaccines, we are using as a veterinarian that day. But the common thread is the same. The owners that we deal with want to know that we are not just in a habit, right? That we vaccinate every patient, that every dog is the same, no matter the breed, age, or lifestyle risk. They really want to know that we are making a thoughtful, tailored, individualized medical recommendation for their pet in the room in front of us today.
I love that. And I was just talking about this last week when we were saying that VIP, everybody is an important person or patient, but the I stands for now individualized care, just like you were talking about. Like it's not a cookie cutter one size fits all. And along those lines, I see a lot of pet owners are looking at a risk assessment themselves. And we know, I mean, we're the professionals too, but we look for the evidence. So what does the evidence actually tell us about vaccine safety in pets? And how do you help owners who are looking those things up, weigh perceived risks against real risks of infectious disease?
So the evidence tells us, which is no surprise, right, that vaccines aren't 100% risk-free. Nothing is 100% risk-free, right? But the evidence does tell us that they are overwhelmingly safe and that the risk of those serious vaccine-associated adverse events that we think about is very low compared with the risks of the disease that we are trying to prevent. So there's a couple safety studies that I want to just briefly mention. I think they're important for all generalists to be aware of. Not every client, of course, is going to want you quoting and citing studies in the exam room, but there are some that will, or at least sending it to them. So a couple that we should be familiar with. So there was a very large JAVMA safety study that was published in 2005. It was led by George Moore and colleagues out of Purdue, and it evaluated more than 1.2 million vaccinated dogs. And they were looking at the amount of vaccine-associated adverse events diagnosed within 3 days of vaccination. And they found that absolute number was 38.2 per 10,000 dogs vaccinated, or less than half of 1%. That is extremely small when we think about the grandiose nature of how many dogs are getting vaccinated. This study also showed that risk increased in smaller dogs and when more vaccine doses were administered at the same visit. So that does give us a really practical evidence-based way to think about how to individualize the plan rather than just dismiss the owner's concern, but also to give reason behind why we might be suggesting splitting vaccines. There was a newer, though, JAVMA study that was published in 2023, and this had 4.6 million dogs, so triple the size. And it reinforced that our smaller body weights and breeds and multiple injections can be associated with increased adverse event reporting. It also showed that the adverse event rates for leptospirosis vaccines, and this is super cool because, as you know, I'm a huge lepto proponent as far as vaccination and prevention, that the rates for lepto were no greater than those for DHPP as well as rabies. That is such a key point because leptospirosis vaccine is now core, yay, but they have historically carried that reputation of being more reactive. The current evidence does not support treating them as uniquely unsafe. So when I'm talking to a pet parent in an exam room or educating in a lecture or even just, having a friend who calls me asking about this and speaking in my veterinary voice, I try to separate what I call the possible from the probable. So yes, is a vaccine reaction possible? Of course, it's possible. Mild lethargy, soreness, fever, or localized swelling, those are all possible adverse events. Allergic reactions can occur, but rarely. The real diseases, though, that we vaccinate against, so parvo, distemper, rabies, panleukopenia, feline leukemia, and leptospirosis, those are not theoretical, right? They exist. They can be severe. They can be super expensive to treat. They can be contagious. They can be zoonotic in some cases. And in other cases, they are even life-threatening, as we know. So specifically for cats, though, I think it's fair to acknowledge that there are concerns around adjuvanted versus the non-adjuvanted vaccines. And we can say that without overstating the risk. There was a 2023 European study that came out comparing that, looking to see, again, in the combination versus adjuvanted versus non-adjuvanted. And really, what we need to take from this is that this does not mean every cat needs the same product or protocol. What it means, though, is that just like you said around this VIP individualized care, it's really important to have a thoughtful discussion around vaccine selection and individualized risk, especially with our cat caregivers that have concern around inflammation or injection site reactions. And I think a key point that we can kind of summarize is this: is if you're in the exam room and you're really not even sure where to start, something like this might work for you, or make it into your own words. Is my goal is not to give your dog or cat, or insert the name of the patient you're working with, every single vaccine possible. That is not our goal. Our goal as a veterinarian is to protect your pet from the real preventable diseases using the safest, most appropriate protocol for them. So we want to be comprehensive, but we also want to tailor to the individual risk of that patient and give that pet parent the information that they need to make the most informed decision.
I love that. And these are great sound bites to the listeners tuning in to really steal, especially if you're starting out in practice trying to find out your footing when you're having that conversation. And because part of our job as veterinarians is really controlling the controllable, and preventive medicine is what we do, to your point, like you said, day in and day out. And sometimes we take it for granted how often we're having these conversations. But you will have those clients that will have some pushback. And you want to move the conversation forward without alienating them at the same time, right?
So the first step, I think, for all of us to remember is that the last thing we want to do is make a pet parent in the exam room feel foolish or silly for asking a question or to feel judged. Because the fastest way to lose trust when you're responding to someone who is fearful is to have them feel judged for how they came to you with that question. So I usually start with something like, I can absolutely see that you're trying to make the safest choice for your pet. So let's go through the risks together, and you ask me questions along the way so you can make the most informed decision. Because what we don't also want to do is have this be us versus them. And I empathize with all of you because I've been there myself, where it feels like we're on the attack, right? Or we're being attacked or getting defensive because of perhaps the way something has been framed or questioned. So that sentence that I said about, I can tell you're making this, trying to make the safest choice. Let's talk through this together. What it does is it reframes that pet parent from being across the table to being a partner, collaborating in the medical decisions for that patient. So it helps us work together versus work against each other. So what we want to do is validate their emotion without validating misinformation. If you feel comfortable even asking, what is the thing you're most worried about here? What are you afraid of? Using absolute risk instead of just these vague kind of generalized reassurances, and then offering a plan so that the pet parent knows what's ahead. So you could, again, we don't want to say something like, oh, Mrs. Jones, you're totally right. Vaccines are dangerous. We don't want to validate by giving them misinformation. Instead, we could say something like, I could understand from reading that online why that would worry you. It would worry me if I read that information, especially if the pet parent brings in something, a blog or a statement they're quoting that they found online or in an AI engine or something like this that you know is not correct. We don't want to flip the pendulum all the way to the other side. Instead, we validate their emotion. And then we could dig a little deeper and say, well, I see you're reading about allergic reactions or immune overload, or if they've had a previous reaction, they're always going to have it. So something that they've read. So you understand specifically what detail has made them the most fearful. And we can address that with calm, evidence-based concerns. I think also pet parents also respond better when we're specific about their concern. So instead of saying reactions are rare and just kind of being general, you could give them that stat and say, you know, I completely understand why you're nervous. Let me give you this most recent study, and it showed that less than half of 1% of these dogs actually had an adverse reaction. So that's really good odds, right? So something that where that specificity builds trust. And then in those more complex cases, so a small breed dog where maybe there has been a previous reaction, you've got a patient that it has multiple comorbidities and maybe is more a little bit more medically complex. I think it's important to give that pet parent that same feeling. Again, you mentioned the VIP, right? That individualized plan is to say, you know what, this year we've got to talk about this differently because we had this previous reaction. We can separate vaccines. We can monitor your pet here longer. We can do more documentation. We can investigate further. We can dig deeper into your risk factors. Let's take a little bit more time around that history. Let's look and bring in the AHA vaccine risk calculator. We can bring in more evidence to give them more comfort in the decisions you're making together. Because the best conversations I've learned the hard way and certainly had to perfect along the way, the best conversations from us are never lectures, right? It's not this one directional didactic communication. It's having a conversation around risk, letting that pet parent leave the room, truly understanding why you made that recommendation and why it's in the best interest of their pet.
Absolutely. Well said. I mean, that's clinical empathy in and of itself, right there. And the
Yes.
stuff, things that we talk
Yes.
about all the time. And sometimes our clients don't necessarily have that clinical empathy. But when I do talk to them and they're passionate, to your point, about some of these findings that they're hearing about, I'll usually say that I need our decisions from the heart to be smart. Because sometimes to your point again, you care so much about your dog or your cat that you don't want to, you fear the risk of them having an adverse reaction. But at the same time, here we are using our emotional intelligence to kind of give them the reason why we're making the recommendation. The why behind the medicine is what matters when we have that conversation with them.
Absolutely.
What I also think about too, Dr. Marks, is I'm just going to use me as an example because I have dachshunds, as you know, but
Yes.
their lifestyle is definitely different than the other ones. They get groomed every 6 weeks. They're social butterflies. They're going on the boardwalk. They're interacting with other dachshunds. So talk to us and to the listeners, like, what is that conversation or how does that change for you when it comes to core versus lifestyle vaccines?
Yeah, the conversation's very different, right? So, and I'll be, you know, again, transparent. For core vaccines, I am much more direct because these vaccines are not only protecting against diseases that are can be pretty severe, that are contagious, quite contagious, legally significant, right? They're zoonotic and reportable, and they can have really big consequences, i.e., life-threatening. So for dogs, again, rabies, distemper, adenovirus, parvo, so our DPP, and now leptospirosis, those are conversations that we need to be, again, I'm not saying pressuring and I'm not saying forceful, I'm saying direct and clear. And lepto, of course, you know, and again, this is my sweet spot, right? But this is a very important shift in our conversation because historically, you know, and probably it's varied by region, geography, and kind of years out of school, we have described lepto as this lifestyle vaccine for hiking dogs and hunting dogs and dogs on the farm or dogs that go in water. But that framing, and I want to be very clear here, that framing is out of date. And the AHA 2024 update to the canine vaccination guidelines stated that lepto should be considered core for dogs in North America, again, for all the reasons that I said, and also because it is endemic in much of the continent. So if you think lepto is not in your area, please open up your frame of thinking because it absolutely is. And the ACVM consensus statement also supports this. It recommends annual leptospirosis vaccination for all dogs starting at 12 weeks of age, regardless of breed. So you can absolutely give historical context and say, you know what? Yes, this is a new conversation for us this year because this used to be treated as a lifestyle vaccine, but our understanding of this disease has changed. And we want to change with the new information, right? We want to be as up to date as possible. So we know that city dogs and small dogs and dogs that maybe don't have an obvious exposure to water sources or hunting, right, or farms, they are still at risk because of what we now know about the prevalence of this disease. And because it's zoonotic, we've got to protect your dogs, your furry family, so you can protect the humans in your house. For lifestyle vaccines, though, so things like Bordetella, canine influenza, Lyme in certain regions, and of course, for cats, we're talking about feline leukemia here. It really is based on exposure. It goes back to what we've been talking about this entire podcast, which is having that very clear and conversation that's centered solely around the individualized risk of that pet in front of you. Is there boarding? Is there grooming? Is there daycare, travel, training classes, dog parks? Do you live in an area with high tick exposure? Are you going to social, just communal areas in your condo building? Does your cat go outside? Is your cat living with a feline leukemia positive cat? Is there exposure to unknown cats? Are you fostering animals? Do you live in a household where you're adopting new cats? There's so many of these history questions that don't have to take up 20 minutes of your exam time. They can be sent ahead of time. There's lots of resources out there to help guide you in those conversations. But really, it comes down to this. Core vaccines are your foundation of protection, right? They protect against those diseases that are life-threatening, contagious, zoonotic, right? Reportable, all of the things we've talked about. But lifestyle vaccine conversations is about mapping out the risk exposure of that patient. So they're still equally important to have, but remember, we're doing the foundation first and then on top, looking at individualized risk.
And pet owners appreciate that so much when you're having that conversation with them in the exam room. I can't begin to tell you. I know myself personally when I talk about this is, tell me about their lifestyle. And they're like, "What do you mean? Where are we going with this?" And the fact that we're really catering and customizing a vaccine protocol that works best for them, it goes a long way to the pet owner. They really appreciate that. And sometimes they just didn't know. They didn't know the risks, like you were talking about, especially about leptospirosis. That's certainly a big one.
Right.
And as we're wrapping up here, Dr. Marks, if you could change one thing about how veterinary practices currently approach vaccine conversations, a script, a tool, a protocol, what would it be?
Well, we don't have enough time for all the things that I want to do in the future. However, I think I want to just leave with this because I think this is a core principle. If we could get everyone to do this, I think we would see a lot of change. As everyone listening to this podcast knows now, you'd be living under a rock if you didn't. But the cost of care, accessibility of care, value of care, so many people not seeing the veterinarian because they can't afford cost or waiting until life-threatening emergencies to seek care. All of these conversations have been swirling and gaining more intensity over the last year and a half, maybe two years. And so I think it's really critical for us to think about how do we message why these patients are coming in. So if I could change one thing right now, I would move away from veterinary practices having this sort of vaccines do model, where we send out a postcard or a text or an email or an app reminder and says your vaccines are due. And instead, think about structuring something like an infectious disease risk assessment. So, thinking about reframing how we say that. So, it's not this habitual, every single dog that exists gets the exact same protocol. You could say the same for cats. But instead, thinking about how do we customize care. Basically, it's the conversation, discussion, and informed consent, right, around that decision making of what is most appropriate for this dog or cat this year, this age, this health status, this region of the country, this risk exposure in front of me today. And the tool that I would love to see in every practice is a simple one-pager client-facing vaccine conversation guide that's built into the visit. It shows what vaccines are core, are why, which vaccines are lifestyle based and why, and what risk exposures matter per vaccine, the pet's individualized risk factors, the safety profile, and then just a clear plan around what to expect post-vaccine visit. And you could do something as simple as saying to this pet parent, you know, today I don't want you to just check a box, right? That yeah, I'm getting vaccines today. What I'm doing from my end is I'm looking at your dog or cat's actual risk of infectious disease, thinking about the severity of those diseases and the safety of the vaccines and your concerns. All of those factors weigh into my plan today. And then we're going to make a plan together that protects your pet without doing anything unnecessary. So really that shift about the conversation is not so much what the content is, because we've been doing that all along. What it's doing, though, it's including the owner in that conversation. It's laying some really strong foundation on the basis of science. And it's positioning us as the veterinarian, as the trusted medical advisor in the room, not a salesperson, not somebody going through the motions of this is my ninth vaccine appointment today, not someone who's lumping this dog into the massive dog, 90 million dog pool of the US, but we're having that VIP moment where we're focusing just on that pet. And that is the missed opportunity, I think, in a lot of practices today, because we're so used to just giving vaccines. Someone draws them up, we give them, and we move on, that they almost, to a lot of pet parents, feel rushed or so routine that they're kind of devalued. And these conversations, though, can be some of the most important trust-building moments that we have with our clients to strengthen that veterinary client relationship. And if we handle them well, we not only improve vaccine compliance, but we strengthen that bond with that family to our practice so other conversations become easier. So if we can flip the way we present this and change that conversation and give that pet parent just that simple one pager as evidence, we can make a really big dent in giving that pet parent the information that's accurate and correct and timely so they feel the best in that exam room visit.
Collaborative care, that's what we're talking about here, working with the pet parent and learning and growing together and adding value to that office visit like you're talking about. So much incredible education comes away from those powerful exam rooms there. So Dr. Natalie Marks, thank you so much for joining us and thank you for sharing your expertise with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you to Boehringer Ingelheim for sponsoring this great podcast. Don't forget to rate the podcast and we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.